Off the Ball.
Home of the Saturday panel. Every Saturday from 1.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, you're very welcome back this Wednesday evening. Wednesday Night Rugby coming your way after 8 o'clock with Jerry Thornley and Liam Toland. We're going to speak with the whistleblower who said that the anti-doping head of London in 2012 from a Jamaican perspective was pretty much non-existent. Renee Ann Shirley went public with that in a Sports Illustrated interview and has been called a traitor by her country people. So she's a pretty interesting person to talk to in light of the fact that today the medal from the relay team in 2008 that Usain Bolt was a member of was stripped. Get to all that in the next hour, but now we're talking some rugby because Dave McIntyre was at the Six Nations launch in London today. We're going to hear from Conor O'Shea, Dylan Hartley, Rory Best, and first here he is talking to Joe Schmidt.
Joe, the highs of November, the highs of the South Africa tour, I mean, we won't forget a lot of those days, but you're paid to make this team better every time you guys take to the pitch. In particular, what areas do you feel that Ireland do need to improve on from November to take that next step and to become an even better side than the one that we saw last year?
Yeah, I think there's always a number of things across the board. You know, one of the things was defensively, with Andy Farrell having come in, he's done a super job so far. But, you know, he's had less time to influence the group. And so he's still building that real defensive system and the priorities for every player in that system. And so, you know, I think we did some fantastic defensive stuff. You know, holding Australia out was phenomenal with Kieran Marmion on the wing and Joey Carberry at fullback. You know, as Simon Zebo said to me, you know, it was like being out in the crash out the back.
You'll never go home one night and think we have our defence licked now. I mean, no head coach is ever going to be in that position, are they?
No, you're never in that position. But you know, we do still feel that with new players coming in. You know, there are some players who are further ahead and have a better understanding. You always want everyone to have the same understanding so that everyone's up to speed
and
as much as it possibly can be, Dave, because then you're always going to hit the odd speed bump or whatever. And so, you know, there was real progress. And
so is that Marmion incident, if you want to call it that, does that encapsulate where you need to be as a coaching team? That never in your wildest nightmare did you think that Kieran was going to end up in that position, but because of the work that had been done and the efforts that you'd made to bring each player up to that level, it just worked. Maybe it isn't a surprise when it does work.
Yeah, to be honest, it was as much Kieran himself. Okay. He had to make some really big decisions on the edge when there were numbers over, you know, and I think as a scrum half, quite often scrum halves end up defending on the edge anyway. Mm. So they, you know, from a line out, a scrum half often ends up on the edge. So he was already probably a pretty good decision maker out good there anyway. Picture, yeah. And as far as courage is concerned, you do not question Kieran Marmion's courage. He is insanely courageous, and I think he demonstrated that. It's two tackles on Naivalu from kickoff, where I think Naivalu tried to go straight over the top of him, and probably when he looked at him, he felt that he probably could. But I thought,
serious courage.
Yeah, and again, you know, I think the more players that commit fully like that, the more competitive you're going to be. But it's not enough to be courageous or really emotionally charged. You've got to be clever as well as courageous, and you've got to have a system. And so, you know, same on the attack. In the All Black game, we made enough line breaks in the Aviva that we had our opportunities. Particularly, you know, we dropped a ball just short of the line. We crossed the line twice. You know, we'd scored 5 tries against them in Chicago. We crossed the line 3 times in the Aviva and got no tries. Twice we got held up, and the other time the ball was dropped by the player crossing the line. So from that perspective, you know, you've always got those things to build on. Why and how didn't we quite get over the line here? How and what can we do to make sure that next time we give ourselves the best chance of getting over the line? So, you know, you're always doing that. Our scrum in Chicago was superb. We had them under pressure. The scrum in the Aviva, we knew that they would angle massively on the Lucid side, and we try to combat that, but it was a lot tougher night. We didn't quite get the same platform, and therefore we didn't get the same front foot to get ourselves started with. Those sorts of things, you're always looking for solutions, and sometimes you need help with those solutions from the officials, and other times you need to find the solutions yourselves.
Can I ask you one question? I'll be very brief. The schedule is against us, I know. There's such a body of work ahead of you now. When you think of the days that you enjoyed in November, are you looking forward to the next 9 weeks, or is it such a job of work that the professional head in you means that there really is no looking forward to anything? You just guys have to get through the next 9 weeks. Mentally, what's your approach now that you've got all this experience under your belt as an international head coach?
I think that I'm incredibly lucky to have the job I have, because it is the toughest 9 weeks of the year coming up, and I'm most excited about the toughest 9 weeks, you know, because if you don't get excited about this, you shouldn't be in the job. I can't wait to get started. I hope it never comes at the same time, because I know the pressure and the expectation, and you never want to let people down. So it is paradoxical in that it's the most excited, the most enthusiastic that you can be, and also the most terrified that you don't quite deliver on the expectations that you have of yourself and your team and they have of themselves, and we know that the Irish supporters have. So, you know, I think it's a fantastic competition, and I don't know anyone of the coaches here who aren't incredibly excited about the next 9 weeks.
Thanks a million, Joe. Best of luck. Cheers.
We'll talk about that in a minute, but first let's hear from the Ireland captain, Rory Best. Dave asking him if it's refreshing to get away from the struggles of the Ulster camp and mix with the lads who, you know, have been doing a bit better with the other provinces.
Rory, I can't imagine the Ulster camp has been the happiest place over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Has it been refreshing for you just to get yourself out of that environment for a little bit of time and get back to what you know so well in Carton House with the lads?
It has been. You know, we've obviously had Leinster, Munster and Connacht coming in, two of them off the back of a home quarter final, one of them off the back of, you know, another 3 minutes in that game, and they could have had a quarter final. The difference with Ulster boys, it has just been it's a change up for us. It's a different environment. It's a different, you know, we're coming in with guys that are coming in buoyed from their success provincially.
Does that perk you up straight away, just but the natural energy that's flown from those boys?
Yeah, look, you get the natural energy, but also it's a bit of a clean slate for us. We're back into, we're part of a squad now that is starting a new competition. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's about, right, here's a competition. We really disappointed in Europe. We're out of that. Well, we're now into another European competition, if you like, where we have a clean slate and a real opportunity to push forward and being part of something special if we buy into it and we try to keep pushing forward ourselves.
Yeah, much happier talking about Ireland there, the Ireland captain, than talking about the Ulster situation with our Dave.
It's pretty upfront. Yeah, I'm delighted to get out of there.
So, Dave.
It's a nightmare.
Things are terrible, Rory. You must be pretty happy to be here in London.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Dylan Hartley, though. He was asked if he owes Eddie Jones a debt of gratitude for once again being awarded the England captaincy.
Do you feel you owe Eddie a debt of gratitude that he has persisted with you with the captaincy when a lot of coaches could have taken it from you? Is there more coming into this Six Nations as opposed to just trying to play well for him and for your family and for yourself, that the captaincy just brings a little bit more with it?
You say taking the captaincy from me, I mean, it was never mine in the first place, you know. So coming into this camp, I had clear directives from Eddie what I had to achieve to be involved with the Portugal camp. And he's not joking. He announced the captaincy earlier in the press next door. Mm. So he hasn't before then said to me he wanted me to do it. He just said, you know.
Is that where you found out? You found out at the top table.
Sorry.
I don't know. He asked me to come to this launch with him, so it was either that. Yeah, I had to carry his bags and that. But no, look, he gave me clear directives on what I had to achieve to be involved with the squad, and the fact that I'm here, I've got another 2 days back in Portugal to put my best foot forward for selection.
That's interesting. The English press officer didn't want him telling the truth there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No questions allowed. No. Fair play to Dave and whoever else was there. Going, hang on, shut up.
Like, we're either allowed to interview him or we're not.
Yeah. And also, like, it's not that big a deal.
It's just a bit of colour. It's like one of the few interesting things out of the whole
day, and it's
he's absolutely nothing there, is it? He's not jumped in with anything there. That's not lethal Dave McIntyre, is it? Imagine if the real Dave comes out. That's the thing. But he was nothing.
But it's the press officer panicking about a headline. I only found out I was captain. Well, so what if you did? That's absolutely fine. I don't think Eddie Jones cares either way.
I know.
And he's like, what did he say? That's enough now, or that's that, or there was some interference. Could we play it again out of interest? Do we have time? We probably don't have time.
You'd have to skip through the whole thing.
We can skip through it maybe, or get it isolated. I don't know. It just seems a bit over the top.
Yeah.
We will talk about the Liverpool game because it's going to kick off in about 15 minutes' time. Kenny Cunningham is standing by. We'll get to him on the other side of the ad break. And in the meantime, we'll get to listen back to precisely what the press officer was saying there. Maybe it is a bit interesting, though. Like, I know, you know, we're going to this thing. Maybe it's so the whole point is that he didn't even have to ask him. He didn't even have to tell him because it wasn't up for debate at all.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, Eddie Jones is delighted about everything that has happened with Dylan Hartley.
So maybe it's some Eddie Jones brilliance. Of course, I mean, it didn't even merit a conversation that you would be losing it. Yeah.
Like, have a listen.
Is that where you found out? You found out at the top table.
Sorry.
I don't know. He asked me to come to this launch with him. So.
That's all we've got time for.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
The non-story. Yeah. We've got to make sure the non-story doesn't get out here. Mm. Anyway, all right. We're going to take a quick break back after these.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
All right. It's Wednesday Night Rugby. We have with us in studio Gerry Thorney of the Irish Times. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. Good evening, Ger.
Also with us, Liam Toland. How you doing, Liam?
Good, Ger. Good.
You just about made it back from London.
Just about, yes. Aer Lingus, fair play, took off on time.
And they didn't even play any annoying music to let you know about it.
No, indeed.
Tell us, what's that whole jamboree like today? Is it?
It's not made for print journalists. It's a TV gig, really.
Right.
And it's just, polite word for this, it's a constant stream of coaches and captains coming around, taking questions top table from a group of journalists. There's a dailies room, there's an online room, there's a radio room, there's a Sundays room, and there's a television room.
It's a cattle mart, and you don't get any original content really, because actually everybody is asking the same or listening to the questions that you ask, so you don't want to. Okay.
Dylan Hartley was even noting that some of the same English journalists were following him from room to room asking the same questions.
All right, okay. Because they actually have to do online as well as print. Welcome. That's very astute, young Dylan. Dylan Hartley, captain, the question earlier on that Dave McIntyre was asking him was, when did you find out that you were going to be captain? He was like, he never told me, but he did ask me to come here. And the press officer was busy trying to shut down that question. Dave was like literally going, hang on, you only found out today. He's like, well, we never had that conversation. And it struck me that they'd never had that conversation, because there was never a chance in hell that Eddie Jones was not going to have Dylan Hartley as his captain, because he loves Dylan Hartley. He is actually the perfect Eddie Jones England captain.
Yep. Abrasive, loud, aggressive, everything he wants his current English team to be. In your face, the opponents. He's also performed very, very well for Eddie Jones and for England, and his disciplinary record under Eddie Jones for England has been well nigh perfect, a bit like England's win-loss record. So the suspension conveniently elapsed before today's media launch, and there was never going to be a question. All the soundings from the RFU and from Eddie Jones was that once the ban was out of the way with before the Six Nations started, there wasn't going to be a change in captaincy.
Yeah, and the whole sense of morality that the rest of the world tries to ascribe to a professional sports team, like, that's just naive on our parts.
Yeah, a little bit, really. Yeah, this is modern professional rugby, modern professional sports, and he's available to play. He hasn't been in any trouble for England under Eddie Jones, so he's not going to change his captaincy now. But for sure, Dylan Hartley must be on some kind of red alert, on some kind of warning. Now, interestingly, when he was talking about today, he said that his issues were not technical. They were entirely technical, rather, they weren't temperamental. Whereas one would beg to differ. There's been such a series of miscreants and such a series of misbehaviours on the pitch.
When he was talking about that, what did he mean? Like, what was he?
That it was just a going in too high accidentally in Sean O'Brien, that he's learned to bring his tackle down low. He's been working hard with Paul Gustard, the English defence coach, on improving his technique. So it was purely a technical issue the way he saw it.
Yeah, okay. I have to say, Liam, not being there and not having to work all day at it, I actually kind of get quite excited about seeing the photographs of all the captains together, of all the coaches together with the trophy. It's like, this thing is about to start, and it's a brilliant, brilliant tournament. And, you know, as a sports fan, you start going, right, it's game on.
Well, it's certainly an absolutely unique tournament, of that there's no doubt. And it's so different from the World Cup. And we had the good fortune to be over at the various games. And that's more carnival, serious rugby, but carnival, where this seems to be much more serious, the bread and butter of it. And just as I'm sitting here this evening, I jotted down on an A4 page the various rounds and the various potential outcomes. But this season, of course, we've got the bonus points. So I was actually trying to predict who might win and lose, but again, who might gain bonus points and all that sort of stuff. So there's so many little subplots in it. And I think that Ireland will beat England on Paddy's weekend, but will still lose because I think England might gain a few more bonus points. So there's all these little things that are happening, not to mention what Jerry was talking about, Dylan Hartley. And I often think from a team culture point of view that if you've got a messer or a joker or an ill-disciplined player in your team, the best thing you do is promote them. And I know that from my army days and sport days as well. Promote the messer and you'll be amazed what value that will bring to the culture of your team.
That's why you were always my captain, is it?
sometimes, but it is, it's a wonderful tournament and I'm quite excited by it.
What's the psychology behind that? It's just that you give them responsibility and ultimately the messing is a sense of, look, I'm kind of a little bit bored by what you're doing, I need to be more challenged.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a refocusing. Now, of course, I don't know what this guy's doing in the camp and all that sort of stuff, but certainly there is a sense of leadership about his behavior and all the things he's doing. There is a motivation around why he's doing it. Now, it's errant and it's something that gets him into trouble, obviously, but there's clearly something that's motivating him to do these things. And lots of times that could be because he's frustrated by how the fixture is going. He's frustrated when he talks to referees, how that is going. And if you actually get someone of that ilk and you take them, because he's a quality player, like look at his lineout stats, are off the charts. He's a phenomenal rugby player. And he adds huge value. But when you take that type of behavior and you try and analyze it, look at, well, why is he acting like this? And you actually burden him with responsibility. It's amazing the value that comes back from the player himself, but also comes back into the culture of the team as well. And I've played with lots and lots of players who themselves, when they have the freedom to be just a simple player, they can get themselves into trouble. Yeah. But when you hand them the captaincy, all of a sudden it really focuses. In other words, it can have an enormous impact on their own behavior, but also a wonderful impact on the on the culture of the team. And when Eddie Jones awarded him the captaincy some time back, I wasn't at all surprised. In fact, I thought, geez, that's a great idea.
Just to go back to that point you were making about having scratched out the results, some kind of prediction that you expect them to be. You obviously have Ireland losing a game if we...
Yeah, I think the pivot game, Ger, for me is the Wales-Ireland game, which is in round four. I think...
On a Friday night.
Friday night, yeah.
Yeah, I think Ireland could lose that game. And like, this is pie in the sky stuff. And I, like, for example, I think England could easily get a bonus point against France, round one, easily. Right, I definitely think they'll beat France. So I'm already saying they're up to a 5-pointer. If you follow that logic through, I think momentum is huge in the Six Nations as well. When you get the breaks, when you play away from home, all that kind of stuff. So, for example, I think Scotland could beat France away in round two. Yet Ireland, I think, should beat Scotland round one in Scotland. So you factor all that. But I think the pivot game for Ireland, assuming all things being equal, will be that Friday night game, Ireland away from Wales. I think we could lose that game just on the bare bones of not knowing fixtures and injuries and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
The thing about the bonus point system as well is that, you know, you get a lot of wintry days in February, less so in March. You get the Italians who've, you know, given up the ghost on a nice sunny day in Rome or on your own turf, and you're more likely to run up a big score. Yeah. Recent history suggests that. So it's not an inherently fair system because it's not a proper league format. You're not meeting home and away. Some teams have two games at home, some teams have three games at home. England, you look at England's three home games, and it's not inconceivable, as Liam says, that they could get 15 points from those three games. So the other sad aspect to the bonus point system, whether you're a forward or again it, is that we're never going to get a Super Saturday night type scenario ever again, where three teams are going in level pegging as it just comes down to points difference. Now, sure, there's an inherent disadvantage in the points differential system as well, because again, you can get Italy in a nice sunny day towards the end of the tournament in March and you can run up a big score.
Yeah.
That's almost impossible to do against them when they're fired and fresh and it's a bit of a damp, dreary glue pop pitch or whatever in February. So there's lots of that going on. There's other aspects to it as well, in that for the first time ever, World Cup seedings. The draw is going to come next May after this tournament. So this is the last round of rugby matches to affect the World Cup draw. The rankings, Ireland currently are in top band, in the top four. Argentina are down there in ninth, but Argentina could climb because you've got Scotland and France just above them. So there'll be a lot of movement and quite significant connotations for the World Cup draw as well in terms of getting the first, second or third seeding, avoiding that pool of death or whatever it is.
Forgive my ignorance here, but are Argentina playing again before the draw?
No, they're not. There's okay, just the Six Nations games now, but that's not to say that Argentina
won't actually benefit by exactly, Scotland or France having a bad tournament.
They're only just fractionally ahead of Argentina and they could well drop points. The other thing about it as well, Ger, is you look at them around today and there's so much optimism in the air, even more so than normal, I think, at a Six Nations launch. Even Italy have just come off beating South Africa in November. Okay, it's only South Africa, but they've got Conor O'Shea there. Lots of good vibes about him. Scotland have never looked so strong coming into a Six Nations. Okay, we've heard this before, but it's not coming in the back of a Glasgow team, bulk supplier are in the quarterfinals of the Heineken Cup. France definitely could and should have beaten maybe Australia and even New Zealand, but for an intercept try in November when they were offloading and finding shoots of the old France under Guy Nôvez. They're very optimistic about their season, even though they're losing Wesley Fofana. We all know Wales, they're always serial contenders. They're a very good tournament side. They get stronger. I agree with Liam, they could start slowly like they did 4 years ago under Rob Howley when they lost their first match when Warren Gatland was on Lions duty and then end up winning the tournament. And then of course you've got England, 14 games and a row winning run, and Ireland, you know, it's 2-1 second favourites. And the thing about it is, take out Italy out of the equation, of the other five teams, one of them is going to finish first for sure, but one of them is going to finish fifth. Five really good sides, and one of them is going to finish fifth. That's how competitive it is, and they're going to be absolutely disappointed with their season, as is the team being fourth or third. I think it's going to be a really competitive Six Nations, and I'd be amazed if it does come down to a Grand Slam shootout between Ireland and England, like everything think is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility of it, all right, but from England's perspective, I don't know who's going to beat them before that.
But I suppose the big thing to add is in
like Wales and Cardiff.
Yeah, I think there's I'm giving Wales a 4 point win. I'm giving England a 4 point win and Wales not to get a bonus point there, right? And I think that England are going to pick up two potential bonuses against Italy at home, and that leads on what you're saying, Jerry. You know what I mean? Like England are playing Italy at home in round three, when Italy have thrown the sink at their first two games. Like they're playing at home to Wales and home to Ireland. So they're going to put, and then they're playing England away. So England, that's set up for England to get a 5-pointer. Whereas Ireland, traditionally in Six Nations, playing Italy in round one or two, in this case it's round two, would be delighted to get a 4-pointer, to get a win. You know, and that's the mentality of the Six Nations. So the culture of how we approach this competition, and I remember playing in the Heineken Cup back in the day where the bonus point things came in, the yellow card thing came in, all those things had a massive impact into how we approach these fixtures. And it took time to figure it out and took time to understand the nuances of the value of scoring four tries. And if you score four tries, A, you get a bonus point, but B, you also most likely win the match. It's unlikely you lose the match if you score four. So all of these things can prey on how, but traditionally in the Six Nations, you'll hear any person who's played in the Six Nations, any person who's managed or coached, will all say it's all about momentum. But if the fixtures fall in your favour, you may not have the luxury, if winning the championship is what you want to do, which all these teams want to do, to actually allow momentum to be the driver. You need to start getting bonus points.
Unless you win every game, obviously, because if you win the Grand Slam, you win the tournament.
Yeah, because there's a bonus for that, isn't there?
I don't know how they fixed it. I'm not
They fixed
sure.
it with a 3-point bonus for winning the Grand Slam. So they made it mathematically impossible for a team to win four matches and finish above a team that wins five matches.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just said the team with the most wins has
well,
to win the tournament.
They've done it in a good way. At least it safeguards against that, which was always one of the biggest potential drawbacks, unlikely though it was, that a team winning the Grand Slam could somehow finish second. Yeah. They've made that an actual impossibility.
Well, it's a bonus. You get a bonus for scoring four tries. You get a bonus for losing by less than seven. And you get a bonus for winning all your games. So that's perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. They gave it. If you win four matches without any bonus points, you are given three bonus points for winning, five matches.
Yeah.
You're given 3 points. That means you can't be overtaken by the team finishing second with four wins and bonus points in all their games.
I know, I got it. It's fine.
I'm trying my best to write this all down, Jerry. You're going too fast for me.
Anyway, so that is the other thing. So, like, and all joking aside, it has to factor into how you approach the tournament because you want to win the tournament if you're Ireland. And momentum is what Ireland could get from their victories as opposed to we have to chase a bonus point the first day out because that would be insanity. Okay, we got one. we would have got one if they had existed in Super Saturday the last time we were at Murrayfield, but it would be nonsensical to go there thinking we've got to get four tries because we have to win the game.
Completely. And I would say right now that Joe Schmidt would take a 1-point win in Murrayfield. Right now, he'd take a 1-point win. 9-8, whatever, 10-9, he would just take it. It would be a good result to beat the Scots in their current mood away from home, particularly first up in Murrayfield. It certainly won't be 40-10 like it was 2 years ago when Wales were chasing the tries. Then it was Ireland's turn to chase the tries. Then it was England's turn to chase the tries. And France decided they'd join in the fun as well just because it was that kind of day.
Yeah.
And that they're French. But it won't be anything like that. It'll be completely different. And I don't think you will see a major impact from the bonus point system in the opening couple of rounds. It's just be still first and foremost about getting the wins.
The other side of that, though, is that England are playing such a high-tempo, expansive brand of rugby that the bonus
are
points...
Are they? Well, not so sure.
Well, the 14-man against Argentina, that was still pretty expansive. No?
Yeah, well, most of their tries came from turnovers and mistakes. They're not creating a huge amount.
They seem to be killing teams.
Yeah, that's different. Killing teams and creating is different.
Okay.
What do you think, Liam?
They're scoring enough to get a bonus point in every game.
Yeah, I think that what's your man Tulagi, the injured centre, was what's his name?
Manu.
His loss is a huge advantage to Ireland because he's such a wrecking ball, and like centres, like the Irish centres, may be able to tackle him 10 times, but the 11th time he makes a half break. So certain players have the ability to really give you a bonus point opportunity. And just for the final point, from me anyway, if you look at the pool stages of the Champions Cup and you look down at those who've qualified and you ignore what they've won, like take for example Connacht, who won 4 games in their pool, and Toulouse won 3, and yet Toulouse qualify. So the bonus point, we understand in the Champions Cup, is immensely important. We understand this in our DNA. When you're playing for your province, you understand the value of those. You understand robbing that last bonus point you're away from home in the early stages, how important it is. Munster proved that. The Six Nations has yet to switch culturally to that. So for me, that is the single most... Obviously, I hope Ireland win the championship. I think we've a great chance to do it. I think England are favourites. But for me, the sideshow, the bonus point, is so interesting and intriguing to see who can get that up and running early on. Is so interesting.
Okay. England keep getting bad news. Haskell's the latest one to go. Robshaw's gone. Tulagi's gone. Ireland have had almost zero bad news so far. And yet, there's a little bit of doubt about Sean O'Brien. There's a little bit of a doubt about
Johnny Sexton.
Yeah.
And Jarrod Payne's missing. And we'll be tied Ireland if anything happens. Conor Murray. The good thing is, though, that it's the first Six Nations Championship ever without John Hayes or Mike Ross, and the Stocks are so good tight head that John Ryan, a fine tight head in his own right, might not even make the match day 23. So the Stocks are good in the front row, good in the second row, ridiculous as usual in the back row, a little bit thin at half back for sure, and maybe even a little bit thin at midfield in terms of it's Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose, and then where do you go after that? You could go back to Luke Marshall. Stuart McCluskey's got one cap before. Rory Scannell seems to be coming up pretty hard and fast on the rails, and looks as if he's covering third choice 10 at the moment in the absence of Ian Madigan, because he's on top 14 duty with Bordeaux this week. But it looks as if the policy is just not to pick him at the moment, and if it's going to come to it, that Rory Scannell will be covering Paddy Jackson if anything happened.
Oh really?
Yeah, it has that look about it. Yeah, it has that look about it. We'll see how it evolves, but that seems to be the way. Yeah.
Jerry, what's the word on the campfire if the top 14 wasn't playing that weekend? Do you think that there'd be a different, like Ireland are carrying 3 scrum halves coming into this squad. Now, 40 men means nothing because it'll be whittled down. But if the top 14 wasn't going this weekend, do you think that decision would have been changed?
No, I don't actually. To be honest.
It's completely irrelevant then.
There's a hard and fast rule now that to prefer players who are based at home for a variety of reasons. If they start making too many exceptions to that, then
Where do you draw the line? You draw the line, though, as soon as...
Johnny Sexton is when you draw the line when he went to Racing.
Totally. And that's totally understandable. Except in competition, when you need a player...
Oh, absolutely. Sure there will be that flexibility, of course.
So we're not going to go into a game where Rory Scannell is on the bench as our at half, are we?
Don't know, is the honest answer.
Right, do you think it's possible?
I think it's possible. He was very close, wasn't he? 24th man against Australia?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, he wasn't ostensibly covering out half then, but I think he's just getting closer to the squad. He's highly rated. His career's on a very steep upward graph at the moment. He improves every game.
I'm very excited about what he's going to do for Ireland, and certainly as a centre, maybe even as a winger, when he's coming off the bench. But to come off the bench, and we're talking like game two, probably. Mm. Maybe game three here, which is the Wales game, right?
Yeah. There really is the only other option, though, it would be Madigan. The cupboard is a bit bare at the
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, so you just ring Madigan and go, you're in for this game, no?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Wouldn't that be the sensible thing to do?
I suppose if there was a big Six Nations match on the line, I'm sure they would bring Ian Madigan in. Joe Schmidt is staying in regular enough contact with Ian Madigan. You must remember that Madigan's missed a fair chunk of rugby this season as well with injuries, so he's only just come back recently. But I'm sure if it came to during the course of Six Nations that Johnny Sexton went down injured. But as things stand, there's certainly no point in bringing Ian Madigan into the squad this week.
Yeah, because he's not injured. Yeah. It's just a bang in the calf. Mm. That's what we get told. Mm. And the information that was interesting came from Ronan O'Gara by way of Johnny Sexton. And I'm sure Joe Schmidt was not that happy about the fact that the specifics of the information leaked out that way. But I'm delighted that Ronan O'Gara told us that, because at least we got the full facts.
Well, the very fact that he only picked two out halves would suggest that he was pretty confident Johnny Sexton was going to play.
The Tommy Bowe selection is another one that people are kind of thinking, this is interesting, because Bowe we haven't seen since the World Cup when he had that absolutely horrific injury play for Ireland, and it hasn't looked like he's just back to that level of form yet. Now, it's really difficult to tell because Ulster have really been poor in all of the games that we've seen. It took him a while to get back into the Ulster team. He got into the Ulster team and...
way to Exeter, wasn't even picked by Ulster.
Yeah, so you wonder if that's a selection. I don't know what that is. Like, is that
it's partly credit in the bank for past achievements. He is arguably going to go down in the history as Ireland's greatest ever winger, and he's not finished yet. Whereas, you know, the alternatives would be Adam Byrne and Nia Diolokan, who are, you know, relatively inexperienced. Adam Byrne's really only in his rookie season. He's fairly cutting a swathe through it and looks the part, and you'd imagine his time will come. Adiolokan has had only one cap. You know, I can understand why Tommy Bowe's in there, but I don't think Tommy Bowe's going to make the match day 23.
Yeah, okay. Is the match day 23 as obvious as it seems?
It looks that way, doesn't it? You know, you take the back three, it would be no surprise if it was Rob Kearney at full-back, Simon Zeebo left wing, Andrew Trimble right wing. That wouldn't surprise me at all, with Keith Earls in the mix as well, but three from those four starting and the fourth on the bench.
And that's it then. Mm.
Yeah, I would say though, full-back is very, very interesting.
It's interesting, all right. But
I think Tiernan O'Halloran for me has just been pure quality, you know. He is so comfortable in everything he does. He has huge pace. He glides along the ball. He's safe in his aerial stuff. His kicking game is good.
Good footwork too, Liam, isn't he?
And the players around him, his Connacht players, like if you look at Toulouse, when they were in South of France, like he really is a quality player. I don't see what he cannot do, you know. His form seems to be really, really good. And okay, you can bracket Tommy Bowe and Rob Kearney. These are like class players, obviously Lions, etc., etc. And you have to get the balance between maturity of caps, form, all that kind of stuff has to go in. And Joe Smith has proved a master. And you look at the stroke in Chicago, the value of the balance he picked there. So that doesn't go without saying. But for me, again, Tiernan O'Halloran, in terms of pure best full back over the last few weeks, I'd have to say it's him. And then Simon Zeebo has been just sensational anytime he's come on for Ireland. We were sitting together in the autumn series, Jerry, and he certainly had a massive impact when he came on against Australia. But finding that combination between caps, experience, all of that kind of stuff, Six Nations experience, all that kind of stuff is of huge benefit too. So obviously certain decisions will be based on that versus form. But for me, Tiernan O'Halloran has been super. And actually, you can't go far. Andrew Conway, has been probably the most improved back in Irish rugby. He's just been phenomenal last few weeks.
Magnificent defensive reads, brilliant in the air. Looks to have just taken his
left. Try Ian Keighley scored the last day. Like, geez, that was phenomenal. Like, Andrew Conway's work rate has been sensational. His aerial stuff. It's like as if he's plugged into Joe Smith and says, listen, what do you want me to do to improve? Because all of these things are almost Trimble-esque in what he's doing. But his comfort around in defence, the way he reads it, the way he manages trade space for time if he's outnumbered, that he doesn't rush in, you can actually see him thinking and making very clever decisions around when to go in, when not to go in, when to trade space for time, as I was saying. But that little offload and fend for Ian Keighley's try was just fantastic. So I'm delighted that he's in the squad. Now, how close he is again with the competition ahead of him is going to be very, very interesting.
But Liam,
that's where the balance between form and the balance between experience
and also training. Familiarity with Joe Schmidt's methods and his working ways and the way the team shapes up and so forth. And he tends not to bring in sprinters for opening games of Six Nations. You earn your stripes in the Joe Schmidt way of playing. Tierno Halloran, I agree with you, I'm a huge fan of his, but he did lose four balls in contact on the ground. He was turned over four times in the Toulouse match, and that's something that Joe Schmidt doesn't like to see. He doesn't like to see his backs carry the ball into contact and not work hard enough on the ground for the support cavalry to arrive. And you can blame the support cavalry to a degree and the Gluepot surface and Wayne Barnes' interpretations and so forth, but it was still four balls he lost in contact, in effect, through penalties or actual turnovers. And I think the real form fullback at the moment, Liam, would be actually Simon Zeebo. He's just on the crest of a wave, his confidence is sky high, his kicking game is amazing, his cover tackling.
He's finally won the confidence of Joe Schmidt.
Yeah, I just feel that the mats balance out.
He picks him in the team now when he's fit, right? He picked him. He played well. He played unbelievably well in New Zealand, mm-hmm. and he kept his place.
He was on the bench against Australia, wasn't he? Was he? Am I getting that wrong?
Good question.
Yes, look it up. Yes, he was. You're right, Liam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure if he's
came
a full
on
stack.
Early.
Yeah, I'm not so sure if he's a full stack. Would he be the automatic? Look, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Sorry, you're right. Carney was started that game. Mm-hmm.
But the impact Zeebo made when he did play in Dublin that day, like, he was just phenomenal. Like, everything he did, he has that X factor to unlock the most stingiest of defences. And you'd have to say Australia's over time, over history, are an extraordinary stingy defence. And he has that ability to unlock. And I think Tierno Halloran has that sense too. So really it's down to balance. Do you want your fullback to be a goalkeeper, or do you want him to be have that X factor? And getting that balance is going to be really, really interesting.
There's no doubt, as Ron O'Gara said at the end of the November series, that Ireland are just a better attacking team with Simon Zeebo on the pitch. He does unlock defences. His kicking game is very varied, very clever. He finds space on the pitch.
Well, maybe he's one of his confidence as a winger. Sorry.
I think he actually, you get more of Simon Zeebo in the game from fullback than you do from wing.
Yeah.
He's just more involved. And then you bring in that innate understanding that he's developed with Conor Murray. Great mates off the pitch, but they just have this telepathic understanding on the pitch. Murray just knows where he's coming from. And his work rate off the ball to get on the ball from fullback comes more into play when he's got 15 in his back.
But then Rob Kearney had that unbelievable performance against
in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I think Joe Schmidt will find room for both of them.
Okay.
With Zeebo on the wing.
Or with Tribble on the other wing.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. The only other thing about the squad is that the likelihood is that we're going into an unbelievably attritional, if the last number of tournaments that we've seen Ireland play in and the last number of series of internationals that we've seen them play in, half the team that starts will be injured by the middle of the third game. Which means that when players like Gilroy and Bowe are making the squad, the likelihood is that anybody's in that 40-man squad will see some game time just by the sheer rate of attrition.
Don't know about that. It depends. You know, it would be a very good yardstick as to how well Ireland are going to go, because historically, as shown in the Grand Slam year in 09, I think only something like 18 players started the five games, and three of them, I think, were rotated by Declan Kidney.
Yeah.
In the first 2 years when Joe Schmidt and Ireland won the Six Nations title, there was a very low injury profile, a low number of players used, and that's generally, it's much more preferable than, I remember Declan Kidney's last season when, you know, he was practically picking, when he put Peter Romani in the wing, it got to that extent.
Yeah.
So it will be a very good barometer as to how well Ireland are going. It need not necessarily apply that there will be a ton of injuries, but it's certainly Joe Schmidt, by picking effectively three players for every position, is covering his options.
Yeah, I would. It seems like the collisions have moved on to the point, maybe with the head high tackle being ruled out of this tournament, we will actually see less players being knocked out. But I wouldn't be terribly surprised if, you know, if you're not in that 40-man squad, the chances of you seeing any game time in the Six Nations is very small at the moment.
Yes, I would think so.
We've got, aren't there 2 weeks off between? So after between round two and round three, there's a week off. And between round three and round four, there's a week off, which is going to be a huge advantage. So that's a factor too, that we're not playing all games. You know, those 2 weeks are of huge benefit. And the one thing I would say is that Wales, Ireland playing on the Friday, you lose a day, but Ireland do have that week off, that weekend off.
And that also means an 8-day turnaround to the last game, Liam. Ireland are fortunate there's no 6-day turnarounds at any point in this, which will help.
And you factor in what the other nations will be doing during that period of time. So again, Will the French players have to go back and play top 14? Has the new hierarchy in French rugby has changed with Laporte? Isn't he now the head man? Has he influenced their jury?
I think I'm right in saying
thing is working out. They're being ring fenced.
They're being rested this weekend, aren't they?
The French frontliners.
Yeah, they are.
It's a miracle, isn't it? So those 2 weeks off, if the French teams. The French squad get to rest. That's a miracle in terms of how the French approach this competition to the detriment of the top 14. But that does make them a more dangerous animal as the competition goes on. So that's another interesting aspect to it.
All right. Our appetite is suitably wet. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Take care.
To Liam Toland and to Gerry Thorney, my thanks. We're going to bring you up to date on what's going on with the Liverpool-Southampton game with... Joe and Kev in just a moment. It's scoreless after 35 minutes, which means Southampton still lead 1-0, and then we're talking drugs in Jamaica after that.
Off the ball.
Text us on 53106 for 30 cents.
News Talk 106 to 108.